knocking a hole in the Rodman Dam and dredging the St. John's River in exchange. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening on this Tuesday. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, keep listening because we'll tell you about some big potential new plans for the St. John's River. You can get on the line right now with your calls and comments at 549-2937. Then later, how the First Coast is still stepping up to help 5 years after an earthquake struck people in Haiti. We'll tell you about it. Plus, don't miss it as we speak with the cast of the hit news show Stars of David. All of that ahead. But first, this morning, there's lots of talk this week about an unlikely alliance that seems to be forming to determine the future of the St. John's River. Local business leaders, politicians, and environmentalists who famously don't always see eye to eye are coming together in what could be an historic agreement. Now, it would involve going ahead, possibly, with dredging the St. John's River down to a depth of 47 feet to accommodate bigger ships that the port really wants to attract. At the same time, there would be a major change to improve the waterway's health, and that change involves a controversial idea, punching a big hole in the Rodman Dam in Putnam County. Breaching that dam, advocates say, would restore the Ocklawaha River, and it would also send millions of gallons of fresh water into the St. John's River. Now, this is a complicated deal if it goes through, and there is lots to talk about. So right now, St. John's River keeper Lisa Reinemann is sitting in studio to explain. And Lisa, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa. So happy to be here.
And we're already getting your calls. What are your questions and comments right now about this emerging deal that might allow dredging of the St. John's River, and in exchange, it would breach the Rodman Dam in Putnam County? Give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And so, Lisa, as I mentioned, politicians, business leaders, environmentalists, they're not always on the same page. So this is really generating a lot of discussion. Can you tell us what is emerging around this alliance that's forming around the river?
Sure, Melissa, and thanks again for allowing us to come on and talk about this very complex plan. For nearly 3 years, we have been working diligently to focus on protecting the St. John's from the inherent risk of dredging. There will be major environmental impacts from erosion to increase in salinity, sedimentation, the list goes on. The number one issue we've been concerned about is salinity. And so unfortunately today, the Army Corps' work, the plan moving forward, does not protect the St. John's River. We're continuing to fight that plan to get better protections, but this conversation, this agreement yesterday, gives us one other option to protect the St. John's in proactively before the dredging would happen, if it happens.
And what does this agreement say?
It basically says that we will collaborate to work on this significant environmental project, and that's restoration of the Ocklawaha River. As you said, we'll restore not only the Ocklawaha, but major ecological benefits to the St. John's, not only to offsetting the salinity increases, but also helping our fisheries recoup and recover our grasses, our wetlands. So we're willing to look at a state solution, see if there can be authorization and funding for that Ocklawaha restoration, and if it happens at that time, we would drop a legal challenge to the Army Corps' work, which the only legal remedy is for more mitigation. We're continuing with that legal challenge. That will happen probably in the next 60 to 90 days. So now we're looking to fight for protections in two different options.
We're speaking right now with St. John's River keeper Lisa Reinemann, and the phones are lighting up as we discuss this interesting new plan for the St. John's River. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, Lisa, to restore the Ocklawaha River and send fresh water into the polluted St. John's, which would help the St. John's, in order to do that, here comes the controversial piece. You would have to blow a hole in the Rodman Dam in Putnam County, correct?
That is correct.
And why is that controversial for those who haven't been following this?
Well, unfortunately, the Ocklawaha River was dammed almost 50 years ago. And so as a result of that damming, there was destruction to not only the Ocklawaha River, but the St. John's. However, it did create a big pool. It created a lake that many bass fishermen have enjoyed, and there's been an economic benefit of that fishing activity. However, there was wonderful fishing on the Ocklawaha and the St. Johns prior to the damming and that destruction of the Cross Florida Barge Canal, which is the reason it was dammed. And this will actually fortify that the fishing in that area. It will open up many more recreational opportunities. So there's an economic benefit as well as an environmental benefit to that restoration project.
Now, on Monday, you, chamber representatives, city officials, the port officials, you all, Monday night, signed a non-binding memorandum of understanding. This was after months of back-channel negotiations, correct?
And that is correct. You know, the first discussions we walked away from, you know, they were not agreeable from our standpoint, because it is important to us as watchdogs for the St. Johns River to make sure that we are not giving anything up. We're just expanding our opportunities to protect the St. Johns River.
Are you surprised that these disparate groups who often tend to be in opposition seem to be somewhat on the same page?
The city of Jacksonville, the port, the chamber, they've all been saying they wanted to have a balanced approach to this. This is the first time they're putting skin in the game to protecting the St. Johns River.
And for your part, the Riverkeeper sees this as a victory because of the removal of the dam, while business groups see this as a victory because it's going to cost some $700 million or more to dredge the St. John's down to a depth of 47 feet to accommodate these huge ships that are expected, that the port is hoping to attract with the widening of the Panama Canal. This gives business groups and the political class momentum too, doesn't it?
It could be perceived that way. I mean, again, we are moving forward on with our legal challenges just as we would without this MOU. If this collaboration is not successful, then we will move forward on that. There are other legal challenges in our future. There's a whole permitting process. There's issues that have to be addressed, and we are maintaining our right and our obligation to make sure those permits are protective enough. So there's many more obstacles in the way. It's not a clear shot for anyone.
Now, there are some critics to this deal. The chairman of the Putnam County Commission saying they're outraged that they weren't included in these talks to remove the Robin Dam. The Sierra Club of Northeast Florida says they feel that this deal would simply bring new harmful environmental effects. What about the criticisms?
Criticisms expected. There's a lot of nuances of this deal that haven't been reflected in the media. I did meet with the Sierra Club of Northeast Florida last night to answer any questions and to commit to them. We are continuing with these dual fights to make sure we have as many protections as we can. Unfortunately, you know, the Rodman Dam, it was a economic and environmental disaster 50 years ago. We can't change that, but we can fix it. And we're hoping to make sure that we fix that sin of the past while fortifying our river for future sins that may happen.
And let's go to your calls right now. The lines are jammed up as we discuss this potential new deal for the St. Johns River. Have you heard about this? What they want to do is blow a hole in the Rodman Dam in Putnam County, send a lot of fresh water into the river, and at the same time remove roadblocks to dredging the river down to 47 feet. What are your questions right now? 549-2937. Let's go to Dale in St. Augustine. Hey, Dale. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say I'm very excited about the opportunity to restore the Ocklawaha River. I think it will have tremendous benefits for the Ocklawaha as well as the St. Johns. And I really hope that this is a deal that will go through and will undo the damage that's been done.
Dale, thanks for the call. Let's talk about how this would affect the Ocklawaha River and why that's important to you.
Well, it's very important because the Ocklawaha River is the largest tributary to the St. Johns. Historically, there was much more flow coming from that. It connects us to Silver Springs, which is our larger springs. Not only will there be benefit of that flow to the St. Johns, it also restores 15,000 acres of forested floodplain, which is a very important water quality filter to the Ocklawaha and the St. Johns. It also relieves some of the stress on Silver Springs. So it is the restoration impact. It's vast. It's tremendous, and it's time to get this done.
Dan in Jacksonville is with us. Hey, Dan, how are you today?
I'm fine. I'm a little bit concerned about this memorandum of understanding because, you know, like the cruise ship industry, they have violated, you know, the letter itself, you know, on memorandum of understanding because one party, if he doesn't do one thing and then the other party does another, you know, there's no guarantee that, you know, certain events will take place. And then the other problem is, you know, the concern of the public, you know, their docks along the river, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors involved in here, and there's no other guarantee that we get more ships in here because we dredge to 47 feet because Panama Canal is, you know, is widening and all this, but there's no influx of ships other than the bigger ships, you know, with more containers and everything like this. And then, you know, my other concern is the manatees.
Yeah, Dan.
So, I mean, how are they going to address the memorandum of understanding if there's no guarantee? I mean, anybody can violate the memorandum of understanding just like the cruise ship does.
Dan,
how do you intend to address that?
Dan, yeah. Thank you for all of those points. Lisa?
And Dan's exactly right. This is a legally binding document, and that's why we are not giving anything up. We're continuing with our legal fight at the federal level to protect the St. John's, which would involve Ocklawaha restoration, if we're successful with that, as well as we're moving forward on this discussion. But there's nothing giving up, but a lot to be gained.
If you're just joining First Coast Connect right now, we're speaking with St. John's Riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann. She's in studio and taking your calls. The lines are jammed as we discuss this potential new deal that would have huge implications for the St. John's River. What are your questions and what are your comments? 549-2937 as we go now to Mark on the west side. Mark, thanks for holding. Good morning, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning. My concern is with Orlando. I didn't hear anything about, you know, they're still continuing to want to take 100 million gallons out of the St. John's River for their golf courses. And, you know, I'm a little concerned that now they're going to say, oh, look, there is even more fresh water coming into the St. John's. So your concerns are even less, even more unfounded. So, and we want to take another, you know, 50 million gallons a day. Was that addressed or thought about? Or
sure. Yeah. You know, thank you, Mark. And excellent questions from our listeners. It's clear that people are following this. Well, Lisa.
I'm so pleased people are because these are both important issues. And Mark, thank you for bringing up the water withdrawals. As you know, we are adamantly opposed to surface water withdrawals. This river cannot handle additional fresh water being pulled out because it'll bring more salt water in with much damage. And that was addressed. That's something we're concerned about. If the Ocklawaha restoration is used to offset the dredging impacts, it can't be considered new water. This is historic flow. And our legal team, I'm looking into this, you know, we're going to have the surface water fight. I'll be in Orlando next week restating that over and over again. And that will be addressed. If we are successful in Ocklawaha restoration, have to deal with that as part of the surface water withdrawal fight, that's a good problem to have, and it will be addressed.
John on the south side. Go ahead, John.
Melissa and Lisa, thank you for taking my call. If this moves forward, I'm just wondering if there's a coordinated plan for a double explosion party when this takes place. And I'm a resident of Duval County, and I just would like to find out where the status is with our JEA buyback on the water credits. And also, our city council recently approved probably one of the biggest development projects for the headwaters of Burlington and Durbin Creek. And that passage of that legislation really met with zero opposition. And it was also the planning department of Jacksonville was highly opposed to it, but nonetheless, it just moved forward. Hmm. And just take your comments off the air.
Sure. But John, when you say a double explosion party, what's the image in your head?
The biggest fish fry. Just bring your own tartar sauce. You could have bass and then all kinds of saltwater fish.
All right.
And we could do it at the Marine Science Center right there on the
thanks, John.
Edge of the St. John's.
Thanks, John. You know, let's talk about this piece of it, Lisa. Part of the reason there's so much interest in this is because it involves blowing stuff up. Let's be honest. We're talking about blowing up bedrock at the bottom of the riverbed, and we're talking about blowing a huge hole in the Rodman Dam. People want, I mean, for whatever reason, human beings are fascinated with explosives and stuff getting blown up. And that's what, in part, this deal would do.
Well, and you're right. I have two boys, and so I understand that a lot. We talk a lot of blowing up things a lot at our house. But, I mean, and it is. I mean, obviously, with the restoration of the Akawaha, the blowing up, it's a very prescribed, scientific, technically way of moving forward. And there are a lot of answers to be, a lot of questions to be answered regarding the blasting of the dredging. There was a very compelling presentation last night about the impacts to our resident dolphins. Dolphins that call the St. John's River home by work that Dr. Quincy Adam Gibson is doing at UNF. So there's lots of issues that have to be addressed, lots of permits, lots of discussions, lots of unknowns that we are still continuing to work with our partners to address.
And you've got vocal opposition, we need to point out, from bass fishermen who like to fish off this dam in Putnam County. What are they telling you?
Well, and that's that there's a lot of fishing opportunities that are outside the pool itself. There are lots of fantastic opportunities for fishing on the St. John's in the Ocklawaha, and there'll be not only a natural benefit to the fisheries at the restoration of the Ocklawaha, but a very concerted effort to make sure that habitat is protected during the restoration process itself and actually enhanced.
And it looks as though we have on the line a representative from the local Sierra Club, Janet Stanko, calling in as she's been listening, I guess. Hey, Janet, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the chair of Sierra Club, and I just wanted to clarify our position on the Memorandum of Understanding. Sierra Club has lobbied for 20 years to restore the Ocklawaha, so we feel that that would be a good thing. When we made some statements about equating to the Cross Florida Barge Canal, we were really talking about the Jacksport Dredging Project, which we have been against in alignment with Riverkeeper. So just wanted to clarify that we are not opposing the Memorandum of Understanding and the restoration of the Ocklawaha. We think that would be a good thing.
Janet, thanks for that call.
And again, and we're in agreement with Sierra Club. This memorandum does not mean we're pro-dredging. It means we're pro-protection of the St. John's River. And again, we're expanding our opportunities to do what we have to do.
Here are some emails and tweets coming in. Lowell emails the show. Is there a plan for the release and flow control when it comes to the controlled release of the Ocklawaha for stabilization of the flora and fauna?
Yes, there is. There again, it's about a 3-year process to properly breach the dam and restore it, because unfortunately there's a lot of muck, there's a lot of nutrients, there's some harmful things that have actually degraded water quality in the pool behind the dam that we want to make sure that our river in the lower Ocklawaha on the St. John's River side of the dam is protected. So there's a very prescribed process that would have to be taken to make sure the flora and fauna has time to recover and to get the best benefit from that restoration.
And here's a tweet from a listener. Wouldn't breaching the dam be a net zero gain considering the current state of the river and the damage dredging will do?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, it will definitely not offset all of the damage that will be done from the dredging, but it will have a major impact. And so if we don't do it, we're going to lose more wetlands. If we do it, we're going to protect those wetlands. We're going to get actually restoration of the wetlands in the Ocklawaha, the impact. So it will be a net benefit. And that's something we have to tweak out to that determine, because there's more that needs to be done. There's more that we have to do to control pollution and other issues. So this is just the beginning of a continuing of a discussion of this, as well as all the projects and that must be done to restore and protect the St. John's.
This is horse trading, isn't it?
It would be if we were giving something up, but we're not.
You don't feel like you are?
I don't. That would be fair for some of the earlier revisions of our versions of the MOU, but we're not giving up anything unless we get what we're fighting for anyway. So we're just, again, opening our opportunities up.
And calls coming in from across the listening area for St. John's River Keeper Lisa Reinemann. What are your questions about this potential deal to blow a hole in the Rodman Dam in Putnam, and in exchange, dredge the St. John's River? That's the deal that's taking shape right now. Not final yet, but that's what's being discussed. So we want your calls. 549-2937. Martin at the Beaches is with us. Martin, good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate the opportunity to leave my ideas on the radio as well. I was actually part of the city council meetings in the dredging in 1998. Where actually the opportunity to bring cruise lines to Jacksonville became a reality. And since then, it's been one matter after another, it seems like, with the St. John's River, with millions of gallons being taken out of St. John's, which reduces our opportunity to become one of the largest ports on the eastern coast with the new Panama Canal going in. So I'm concerned with the reduction of water, the continued pollution of the St. John's River, which affects a lot of the birds that Beaks has to rescue, which takes community dollars away from, growth that can actually happen in Jacksonville and make us, one of the biggest ports on the East Coast. I think it's great that the dam is going to be open to allow water that was freely given away from our community to restore it to what it should be. But dredging probably should continue, but it shouldn't at the expense of just giving away our natural resource of the water to allow a golf course to do its profit-taking on the backs of our tax dollars. And that's what my comments are, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Martin, out of the beaches.
Well, and Martin's exactly right. This is not, this is not new water. It's historic flow. It will fortify and help protect the St. John's River from the negative impacts of dredging. But just because we're successful on the Rodman restoration, the Ocklawaha restoration, the Rodman breaching, doesn't mean the dredging will necessarily move forward. There's lots of questions this community has to answer about the economic viability of this project. And those conversations will continue.
Right. The economic payoff, also how the money will be raised to pay for the project.
That's correct. The federal money, the state money, the local money has not been identified. And again, that's a conversation this community has to continue to have.
But as they continue to have it, Lisa, we do need to note that I think it's fair to say the business class and the political class in this city, they want this deal done. They have committed to finding a way to get it done. Come H-E-L-L or Ocklawaha water. They want this deal.
They do. And so, again, if we have elevated a conversation about protecting the St. John's River, we've created a new way for the business community to get behind a major restoration project that helps the Ocklawaha, Silver Springs, but most importantly, the St. John's River. And so we're extremely excited and have guarded optimism about this collaboration, but we're not giving up any rights to make sure that we are working diligently to protect the St. John's in the light of dredging that may happen.
Okay, we've got Mitchell, who lives close to the Rodman Dam, on the line. Hi, Mitchell. How are things your way?
Well, they're pretty foggy out here today. Actually, I'm opposed to the idea because there's not going to be any more water that flows through the Ocklawaha. There's only so much water that falls in this whole drainage area. The water goes across the dam, it goes down there, and it doesn't do any harm to the Ocklawaha. And that big lake is a big plus as far as holding back water, because without the dam, what you'd have instead would be, during droughts, a very, very low water on the Ocklawaha, and during flood times that it would be flooded dramatically. And with the dam, it more or less stabilizes it. And on top of all that, I believe that in the future, eventually, the canal will be finished, and all of this stuff is valuable, a way of holding back the water.
Mitchell, thanks for sharing your thoughts. That's Mitchell down in Putnam County, living right by the dam. So that gives you a sense of how folks around there feel.
Sure, and I understand Mitchell's concern, but the facts are that this has been well studied at both the federal and the state level, and there are many studies that show that there will be a restoration of natural flow, a freshwater flow to the St. John's. Unfortunately, when you have a big pool like what's behind the Rodman Dam, you lose a lot of water to evaporation, and that's critical water that's not getting into the system that we're losing today, as well as there's 20 springs that are submerged underneath that dam. That pressure is not allowing that flow. So the technical and scientific data is there, and so we're moving forward using that on both of these fronts.
Yeah, if water sits still and doesn't move, it it goes away like the Dead Sea.
It does. It does. And then you have water quality issues as well.
Speaking of that, here's a tweet from a listener. Might the lakes in Keystone Heights go back up if the dam is taken down? The lakes were high before it was built.
And I have heard that there is evidence of that. That's not something I've studied personally, but that's something I know we've got a lot of friends over in the lake area. I'd love to have that conversation.
So we don't know, but you would hope.
I have heard that that is true. I don't know personally,
Alrighty. But
I do hope.
Let's go now to Chris on the east side. And as we continue to take your calls on the St. John's River this morning, hey, Chris, thanks for holding and good morning.
Hi, Melissa. I was just wondering, how far in the future would this breaching of the dam be if they do decide to go ahead and do the dredging at Jacksport? Are you talking a long time in the future or pretty quickly if the dredging goes through?
Okay, Chris, yes. Good question about the timetable.
Yeah, excellent question, Chris. I mean, we see it that it has to be done proactively. The whole focus of offsetting damage of the dredging is to have a proactive fortification of the river, if you will. Those are facts that will all be worked out and worked through this legislative session as we collaboratively try to tackle the restoration of the Ocklawaha.
Okay, so you're looking ahead to the next legislative session. What else is on your plate? What are some of the biggest hurdles to this being a done deal as you look ahead through 2015?
Well, I think it's this legislative cycle. I mean, there's two paths. We have a legal track, and that timing is going to happen within the next 60 to 90 days. You'll see us focused on a federal challenge. We have a legislative track that we may be able to get this done in this next legislative session. Time may be a hurdle. There's obviously lots of issues. I'll be headed down and talking to different folks on all sides of this issue to make sure we're not missing anything. And again, it's not a silver bullet. There's many other things that have to be addressed, like erosion issues that it's happening. We have to get our arms around that. The Army Corps, Jacksport, they need to focus on fortifying those banks so there's not more damage to those homeowners in that area.
Lots to discuss, but certainly a fascinating topic, and we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
She's St. John's River keeper Lisa Reinemann. She joined us this morning to talk about this pending deal involving the St. John's River. Thanks for all of your calls. And much more still ahead. Later, don't miss it as we speak with the cast of the hit new show Stars of David in town this week. But up next, how the First Coast is still stepping up to help Haiti 5 years after the earthquake there. That's in a moment.
Author Paula Hawkins used to write about romance.
That was women's fiction, I suppose. Chick lit, it's sometimes known as.
But that was never really her calling.
This sounds awful, but I'm not a joyful romantic person. Well, I can be, but I've got a proper dark side.
And her new book, The Girl on the Train, indulges it. Later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9, Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. He's the respected Jacksonville orthopedic surgeon whose heroic efforts in earthquake-stricken Haiti were captured on film in the award-winning documentary Angels of Milo.
This was just a tragedy of biblical proportion. We were going to have to play a role because so many of the hospitals in the Port-au-Prince area were destroyed.
People that came in as volunteers, none of us knew each other.
I don't think any of us had any idea what we were going to witness.
I cry every night when I go to sleep.
We were pushing the limits of the capabilities of our own team and the hospital staff.
I just remember looking up at the ceiling and saying, God, when is this enough?
The 7.0 quake that struck Haiti was the worst natural disaster ever in the Western Hemisphere. Now, some 5 years on, Dr. John Lovejoy and some other Jacksonville volunteers will host an event to help Haitians still coping with the serious injuries they received during the quake. Dr. John Lovejoy here now with more about A Taste of Haiti here in Jacksonville. Doctor, always a pleasure to see you. Good morning.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Great to have you on the show. And we'll talk about the event in a moment. But first, if I could, let's go back to the days after that quake. You and others, other medical professionals and volunteers, got on a plane to Haiti right after the quake struck. What motivated you to do that?
Well, I had been going to Haiti for years, and I had been going to this particular hospital for years. And when we heard about it, we knew it would be a mass casualty disaster and that they were going to need help. And we responded very quickly. I called down there about an hour afterwards and found out our hospital was really spared. I started getting a team together, and my son called, said he's got a team together. So we got us all together and managed to work out transportation down there, which was very difficult because the airlines were closed, and we had to get a private plane to fly us down.
You performed hundreds of surgeries, and in fact, you not only did you do that, you designed and constructed one of the first prosthetic laboratories ever built in Haiti, right?
The trauma that occurred at the time of the earthquake caused a lot of crush injuries, and it took days to weeks for people to get to the doctors. And by that time, these injuries were infected, and the only real possible treatment there was amputation. Mm-hmm. So our first week there, we did about 180 operations.
That's just incredible.
We came back and rested for a week, went back and did another 160. And then I came back realizing there's going to be a whole generation of amputees. Most of these surgeries were amputations. In a population of 10 million in Haiti, there are 50,000 amputees. And after the earthquake, there were 10,000 more. So I came back worried about how these people were going to live and succeed, because an amputee is discarded by society because other people have to take care of him. And if you can give somebody a leg, they can take care of themselves and they can get accepted back in society. So we designed a prosthetic shop in a container. Mike Richards and I had been going to Grenada for 20 years and had a similar container there given by Jaxport, but it wasn't really a fabrication shop. This was a state-of-the-art fabrication shop with all of the modern equipment to make prostheses.
And in that sense, empowering Haitians to learn the techniques and treat their colleagues and friends and loved ones.
I think that's really the whole key of what we've done. We learned, to begin with, we had people coming from here to make them. But taking care of prostheses, you have to continue to maintain it. They may wear out in a year or two or need repairing. So we needed to have something that was ongoing. So we decided to train two Haitians to become certified prosthetists. This is a 3-year course. The University of Don Bosco in El Salvador has a standard curriculum, same as in the United States. Mm-hmm. And they took that course, and they're now finishing. They're in their last testing session as we speak, and they will become the first certified prosthetist in northern Haiti.
Well, kudos. That's a wonderful piece of progress. At the same time, though, 5 years after that earthquake, when you talk about the issues there, they're still overwhelming, aren't they?
Well, they are. You know, people don't see a lot of the changes. The road to the airport is about 15 miles. It used to take over an hour to get there because of all the potholes. It's now paved, and it's a 10 to 15-minute drive.
What a difference.
So there's infrastructure is being worked on. The Caracol Center in northern Haiti, Bill Clinton is directing, is behind schedule, but it's already employing, I think, 10,000 people, and it's growing as we speak.
Yeah. So on a hopeful note then, you and others in Jacksonville are coming together this Thursday night for a Taste of Haiti, a big event. What's going to be happening?
Well, this is going to be a fun event. Just a little diversion here. In the prosthetic lab, we'll make 50 or so prostheses a year, repair 100 or so. Price that out in the United States, and that would be about $1.5 million worth of prostheses.
Wow.
We run the lab for $50,000. We don't charge anything for the prosthesis, so we have to raise the money to do that. And the Taste of Haiti is going to be just a fun evening with wonderful food. We even have some dishes prepared by the Haitians. We are going to have a steel drummer, multiple games, all for the fundraising, and just a fun evening. And we just invite everybody to come.
Yeah, not too late to mark your calendar. This is going to be happening this Thursday night, January 15th. It's a Taste of Haiti, kicking off at 6 p.m. at the Haskell Building. That's on Riverside Avenue. You want everyone to come out.
Oh, we do. We want you all to be involved. It's a great effort.
Well, what you've done is so significant, and it's always great to see you. We so appreciate you joining us this morning to bring us this update, and have a great time out there Thursday.
Thank you, and I hope I'll see a lot of people there. We're going to have a lot of fun, so come join us.
He's Jacksonville orthopedic surgeon Dr. John Lovejoy. Again, that's A Taste of Haiti, Jacksonville, from 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday night at the Haskell Building at 111 Riverside Avenue. Proceeds will benefit the prosthetics and other medical programs at Hospital Sacré-Cœur. That is a major employer and the largest private hospital in northern Haiti. And we're back in a moment with the cast of the new show, Stars of David. So keep listening.
Boyhood just won the Golden Globe for Best Film Drama. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette, who star in the film, which was shot over the course of 12 years.
There was points in time where I thought, okay, we're 7 years in. If this falls apart right now, this will be a real drag.
Colossal waste of time.
Yeah. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Fracking requires water, that much you've heard. Also, though, tons of sand, not, however, just any sand.
You know, people think of sand and you go to the beach and you pick it up and it's, you go to Saudi Arabia, there's a lot of sand. Well, sand's different. It's only in a couple of places.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the $10 billion sand business, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, nearly 3 million new jobs were created last year in the U.S., but these positions were largely for low-wage work. Who's working? Who's not? And prospects for the 2015 economy.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet,
and who doesn't,
we're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's the funny new musical review that celebrates some of America's best-known Jewish personalities.
I talk the way I'm talking, my hair all frizz and curls. I prayed to Barbara Streisand, patron saint of Jewish girls. Barbara, can you hear me? Barbara, can you hear me? I got myself an acting coach, a talent agent, too. They said nobody gets famous who looks and talks like you. You ain't got good English. You wear those sprayed-on jeans. You're nothing but a bridge and tunnel Yiddish guy from Queens.
It's Stars of David. That song puts the spotlight on Fran Drescher. Also in the show, homages to Joan Rivers, Norman Lear, Aaron Sorkin, Gloria Steinem, and many more. Now, the production is in town this week for just a few shows, so you want to catch it. Cast members Mike Westrich and Avi Hoffman are here now with a preview of Stars of David, Story to Song. Hi, guys. Good
Hi.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great to see you guys.
You too.
Thank you for having us.
This sounds like such a fun show. Avi, let's begin with you. What's Stars of David all about?
Well, first of all, it's based on a novel, on a book that was written by Abigail Pogrebin, and she interviewed some of the most successful, most significant Jewish personages in the United States of America to find out what Judaism meant to them. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating is every single one had a totally different take on what it is to be Jewish.
Oh, wow.
And then a famous New York producer named Daryl Roth decided to turn it into a musical, and here we are.
And
it's great because it's funny, it's moving, it's got a lot of pathos and a lot of heart and a lot of soul.
Mike Westrich, tell me about your role in the show.
I play Man One. What's really interesting about the roles in this show, they're separated into Man One, Man Two, Woman One, Woman Two, and we each play...
But you take on a variety of roles?
We do. Oh, each take on very different personalities. But the thing to know about this show is it's not impersonations of these, you know, celebrities. It's just we're speaking their words. So, for example, I sing a song about Leonard Nimoy, about Andy Cohen from Bravo, which that's a blast.
Hysterical song.
Oh, funny.
Tony Kushner, the playwright. So, but it's never a caricature. It's always truth. Play the truth.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Right.
And here are some of the bold-faced names that are celebrated in this program, in this show. As I mentioned, Aaron Sorkin, you know, creator of The West Wing in the movie The Social Network, feminist icon Gloria Steinem, Andy Cohen of Bravo, fashion designer Kenneth Cole. Mm-hmm. You've got Leonard Nimoy, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Joan Rivers, playwright Tony Kushner, TV writer, producer Norman Lear. So you shift.
Steven Spielberg. Both Mike and I get to be Steven Spielberg at one point.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So how do you shift between all these different roles and personalities?
Well, I think Mike hit it on the head. You know, the idea is we're not impersonating these people. And the way the piece is written is to show all of these different aspects. So it's a very fluid show. We go from one celebrity to another, and each person in the cast, there are two other ladies in the cast with us, Patty Gardner and Cassie Levine, who mm-hmm. aren't with us in the studio today. But we just go from one to the next seamlessly, and we each get our turn. We each get to sing these amazing songs. Some of the songs. Now, what you haven't mentioned is that the songwriters are also some of the greatest American Jewish songwriters.
Sure.
And so the songs are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us about the songs. Not only are you acting, you're singing on stage.
Sure.
So tell us about the process that goes into that.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's interesting. The fact that we're getting to sing songs written by people like Duncan Sheik, who did Spring Awakening, or Bakken Harnick, who have written, you know, classic, you know, that in and of itself, when I saw, you know, the list of songs, I was like, oh, my goodness.
Right.
But, you know, it's a big part of it is playing the truth of what I don't even want to say characters, of what these individuals are saying. But another thing that we were allowed to do is kind of, you know, infuse our own personality into these monologues and songs. So that in and of itself kind of helped us develop where we wanted to go and the journey that each song takes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it occurred to me too that for people coming out to see this show, they'll be incredibly entertained, but they will also be educated in the sense that some years ago, I remember Adam Sandler doing the Hanukkah song and listing the names of every famous and accomplished Jew in America. And, you know, and you could tell when he did the song, he was trying to point out to people, yes, Leonard Nimoy and Hall of Famer Rod Carew are in our tribe. And, you know, that struck a chord with people, I think, because it was funny and the song was great. And it also enlightened some people who might not have been aware of that.
Well, we also have a section in the show where there's a song called Who Knew Jew? Which is about these people that you would never think they were Jewish.
Oh,
Scarlett
yeah?
Johansson
right.
and Gwyneth Paltrow
right.
are Jewish. And so Gwyneth sings Who Knew Jew?
Oh, how funny.
And so that's fascinating, too. It's a beautiful, beautiful event. It's not, you know, it's something that I think people are very entertained by, and they also learn a lot. And as I said, there are also some very beautiful moments, some very, mm-hmm. very serious, you know, the Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg song, for instance, is so beautiful because she talks about how when her mother died, she couldn't say the prayer because the orthodoxy wouldn't allow a woman to say the prayer.
Oh, to say the Kaddish.
Yes, yeah. The Kaddish. So, you know, the law said, the orthodox law said she couldn't say it.
Uh-huh.
And she went into law, of course,
because she wanted to rebel against that. Oh, how fascinating. Yeah. So there's some history as well.
Mm-hmm.
And to borrow a Yiddish word, some schmaltz.
Yes.
Not too much.
Interestingly enough, one of the things we talked about in the rehearsal process is that we didn't want to make it schmaltzy.
Oh, really?
This is not, you know, this old kind of style. This is a very modern,
it's modern.
American
We're not talking
style.
Borscht Belt style.
No, not at all. No, no.
This is 21st century.
Well, I'm sorry.
What I was going to say is one of the nice things that came along with the book was Abigail was very adamant about these celebrities speaking their truth as far as Judaism. So it's not all... It's not all, you know, the most positive or negative. It's just the truth of their personal life. You know,
right.
There's the Ruth Bader Ginsburg song. There's a song about Kenneth Cole speaking about how he raised his children Catholic.
Because his wife. Cuomo.
So it's very, very, there's so much heart and so much pathos. Like you said, it really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet there's still comedy. You know,
absolutely.
Jason Alexander, who I get to say one of his lines, where he says, you know, according to my parents, it specifically says in the Torah that you can only eat shrimp and bacon in a Chinese restaurant. So, you know, so there is a little bit of that Borscht Belty type of humor.
Right.
But it's really not a schmaltzy show at all. It's a very modern mm-hmm. kind of, you know, modern style.
Now, as adults, are you both still observant? Are you both?
Still?
Yeah.
I never was.
You never were?
No.
Neither was I.
Really? So, okay, then, so what's it like for you emotionally to be in this production where you're portraying a range of personalities? Some are fully within the faith, maybe some are not.
I find it's very interesting. I grew up, I wouldn't say we were never conservative, but, you know, we observed holidays and things like that, but nothing ever terribly religious. So it is very interesting to see the different facets of these specific people's lives. And it's interesting. You learn stuff along the way. You know,
yeah.
I'm learning things, you know.
Wow.
It's interesting.
I mean, for me, I think it's a little more involved. I'm a child of Holocaust survivors. And so I was brought up in a very Jewish environment.
Uh-huh.
But my father came out of Auschwitz and said, okay, I don't believe in God. So there was no religious content to my growing up.
Huh.
And I've been very involved in Jewish culture in my career since the time I was a child. And so, as a matter of fact, if I was here, it was probably because I have a whole series of shows that have gone nationwide on PBS. Oh, maybe that's why I was here. It was the Too Jewish series. My first show was called Too Jewish.
Uh-huh.
My second show was called Too Jewish 2. And my third show is called Still Jewish After All These Years. And so I've traveled all around the country talking about Jewish culture and Jewish identity. And so for me, this show is a fascinating examination of how American celebrities look at their sense of Judaism.
At their sense of Judaism. It sounds wonderful. We so appreciate both of you getting up early with us to tell us about it.
Of course.
Just a few shows. So enjoy your time here. And Break a Leg, guys, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Cast members Mike Westrich and Avi Hoffman, it's Stars of David, Story to Song at the Wilson Center for the Arts on the FSCJ South Campus. You can get your tickets now at artistseriesjax.org. Now, this show is just Wednesday through Saturday. So act fast. Get those tickets now.
Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, it's Wednesday and Thursday?
That's it.
Oh, it's Wednesday and Thursday only. So get your tickets now for Stars of David, Story to Song, artistseriesjax.org. Get out and enjoy the show. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback about the show, we want to hear it. Just drop an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on Diane Rehm, nearly 3 million new jobs were created last year in the U.S., but these positions are largely for low-wage work. Join Diane and her guests to discuss who's working, who's not, and prospects for the 2015 economy. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. On tomorrow's show, we'll welcome State Representative Janet Adkins on pension reform in the city of Jacksonville. That is tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida PO.